WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
The phrase summer reading conjures up a beach chair, a tall, cool drink, and a relaxed reader with a good thick book in her hands. But book critic Maureen Corrigan has been reading frantically into the night to catch up on all the books she meant to get to this summer.
I remember an old John Updike essay in The New Yorker in which he declared that the magic of summer was basically over by July 4th. The days begin getting shorter, the ads for back-to-school gear start appearing, and by August, all that's left of summer's bright green promise wilts. I thought about that essay last week as I faced the pile of books and back issues of The New Yorker I'd meant to get to this summer. The pile was only growing bigger, and summer catch-up time was only getting shorter, and so I dove in and chose these three books. The first choice was, for me, a no-brainer: David McCullough's recently published narrative history, 1776. Whenever I have the time to read for pleasure, I like to read American history, especially books about the American Revolution. Of course, some academic historians have complained that McCullough's books, like this one, and earlier blockbusters like Truman and John Adams, are themselves no-brainers. Feel-good tales of great men triumphing over adversity, heavy on myth-making, and light on complexity. Unlike so many academic historians, McCullough really knows how to tell a story. The problem is he tells it so seamlessly that enthralled readers come away believing that his is the only possible version of events. In terms of the elegance and sheer thrill factor of its narrative, 1776 is another winner for McCullough. I'll confess, it's the one book I've read so far this summer that I couldn't put down. McCullough follows George Washington and the Continental Army through the months of 1776, when, as he says, the fate of the American cause hung on the chance that its ragged citizen soldiers could prevail against the far superior professional forces of the British. To his credit, McCullough presents Washington not as a man of steel, but as a sometimes indecisive and privately despairing leader. His great strengths, according to McCullough, were his realistic appraisal of circumstances and his tenacity. In command of soldiers who frequently turned tail and ran in the heat of battle, Washington philosophically wrote, "We must make the best of mankind as they are, since we cannot have them as we wish." So carried away was I by 1776 that after reading it, I led my family on a forced march to Washington's house, Mount Vernon, to pay homage. But while I was in the bookstore there, I bought Marcus Cunliffe's classic 1958 biographical essay on Washington to read along with some still unread books on the Revolution I own by some of its finest scholars. Books like Gordon S. Wood's Short Modern Library History of the American Revolution and David Hackett Fisher's Washington's Crossing. I think that's the best way to treat McCullough. Let his inspired storytelling carry you away into other books on the same period. Eleanor Fuchs describes an extreme test of character and fortitude of another sort in her memoir, Making an Exit. The book is subtitled A Mother-Daughter Drama with Alzheimer's, Machine Tools, and Laughter, which should give you a sense of the offbeat perspective through which Fuchs views her 9-year trial of caring for her elderly mother, Lillian. When Lillian was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, Fuchs, who had never been close to her mother, became her intimate caregiver, and she describes forthrightly the maternal tenderness she develops for Lillian, as well as the revulsion she feels toward her diapered and demanding body. Here's Fuchs riffing on the concept of assisted living at the facility her mother stays in for a while. The facility has full food service, a nurse on duty 24 hours, laundry and housekeeping services, but that's nothing. Mother can't find her way from the 7th floor to the 1st without assistance, can't dress without assistance, can't go to bed without assistance, can't make pee-pee without assistance. So in addition to the 24-hour everything, Mother has two nurses splitting the weekday job. Plus she has me, and she has her brother Ed, who stops in at least twice a week. Everyone is exhausted. Now there's assisted living for you. Fuchs may have been worn out from the years of caring for her mother, but her appreciation for the tragically absurd remains undimmed. Finally, a Sue Miller novel is for me the quintessence of summer reading. Her stories about families on the verge of imploding are always keenly observed and smart. Plus, there's Miller's delicious descriptions of the surfaces of everyday life and what they mask. Lost in the Forest, her latest book, is set in Northern California, so there's lots here about old restored houses and the smell of herbs and good wine. The novel opens with a jolt, the sudden death of a youngish husband and parent. But as always with Miller, it's the long-term fallout of a tragedy that absorbs her attention. Washington crossing the Delaware in snow and freezing rain, it's not. But in its own fictional way, Lost in the Forest tells a charged story of small heroics, betrayals, and strategic emotional retreats.
Maureen Corrigan teaches literature at Georgetown University. She talked about 1776 by David McCullough, Making an Exit by Eleanor Fuchs, and Lost in the Woods by Sue Miller.